Welcome to the Leaders of PLS 2025, first episode of the first day, of the first time we ever do this podcast live from the PLS Congress. Super, super happy to have you with me, Jimmy Yang.
Happy to be here.
So as I was saying, you're our first guest today. It's early in the morning.
No
Thank
pressure.
You for being with
yeah,
us.
Coffee's yeah, no kicking in, yep.
No pressure. I'm going to read this part just to make sure I get it right.
Sure.
So you're Managing Director, Canada Health Portfolio and Industry Lead at Accenture, which is our main sponsor today. So again, thank you for being with us.
Of course.
As the National Health Lead, you are responsible for driving Canadian health market strategies and managing the overall health portfolio, which is a huge task. So first, I want you to tell us a little bit more about your role and what you do on a daily basis.
Sure. Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here. It's great to sponsor a really important conference for the health sector at large. So happy to be here. And yes, the coffee is kicking in. So,
and we got
a little bit of water. I'm running low here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, the role is a privilege. So I lead our health practice nationally. So really the day-to-day is I work with healthcare leaders, frontline clinicians across the continuum of care and healthcare. And ultimately, we're thinking about how we're working together to solve some of the challenges that the health sector faces today, and also using innovation, technology, artificial intelligence to think through how we might do things differently, all with the goal, really, of saying, are we doing these things together to improve access, improve the experience, and ultimately improve outcomes for citizens of Quebec, citizens of Canada?
And talking about doing things differently, what would you say is the state of healthcare in Canada today?
Well, not to take too much of a turn in the morning, but I would quite honestly say that the state of healthcare today in Canada is in crisis, and the current trajectory as it stands is not very good. I'll try to paint a picture for you, Christine, which is, this is a real-life example. 500 Canadians standing in the cold, minus 10, maybe minus 15 with wind chill. But they're sitting in the cold, but 500 Canadians at around 2 in the morning in the dead of winter on word that one family doctor was relocating to that area and was going to start to take new patients. So think about that for a second. 500 people waiting in the cold just for the chance to possibly be on a roster for a family care doctor. To me, and I think for all Canadians, like, that scene is unacceptable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it also starts to paint a picture to your question, which is we've got challenges around access to care. We've got a lot of Canadians, especially in rural jurisdictions, who don't get equitable care. And it starts to paint a picture that we haven't really thought about how we plan for human resource strategies for Canadians across the country. Now, the at its simplest level, what does that picture say? That picture basically says that we have a real math problem.
Yeah. Pretty logical, actually.
Yeah, pretty logical, right? And so if we look at data and forecasts for Canada from about 2014 to 2034, we have just over half of the capacity today to meet the demands that we as Canadians have for healthcare services, which is not great.
Which makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
So what do we do? Like, what are the solutions? How can we? I mean, this is a big part of, you know, probably your daily life, and like trying to find a way for better healthcare and first line healthcare services. So in your experience, we're healthcare solutions organizations currently focusing their efforts to optimize frontline services, and what areas are seeing the most investments or improvements?
Yeah, there's a lot being done,
yeah.
And we're starting to see some early progress in part. So I try to break that down in a few areas. The first area is thinking through what is the role of technology and or AI, better use of data, to be able to provide our healthcare leaders, our health systems, our providers with better information at point of care. The CIUS Centre West is one example where they're leading the way in terms of using virtual technologies to provide hospital at home services, so people at home don't necessarily need to always travel and go to the hospital for all things services in the hospital. The hospital now using virtual care, virtual technology to bring some services, solutions, consults, diagnostics.
And this is public system. This
is
not private.
This is public system.
We've seen that in other. So this is public system. Oh,
this
interesting.
This is in the public system. Okay. It's happening here in Montreal. Another great example here in Quebec is the Jewish General. You know, again, thinking about how we get a better view of how our patients are doing and moving through the system. They've built this amazing command center that gives them visibility into how people are moving so that they can actually make better decisions in terms of how we plan for surges coming to the hospital or how we're monitoring people who are leaving our hospital and going back to the community. So that's one part. The other part is the healthcare system and providers are starting to look at not trying to solve everything, but saying, if we look at all clinicians' time, how much of that time is being spent on patient-facing care? So care that matters for Canadians. And what most research is starting to find is that somewhere between 20 and 40% of a clinician's time is spent on things that are administrative, clerical, and non-clinical. So now, to your question, they're saying, how do we use technology and AI to automate elements of that 20 to 40% so that we can give a nurse, a personal support worker, or a clinician, a physician, more time back so that they can spend time with patients.
With the people,
that's
exactly.
Right. Yeah, so a lot of good things are happening, and great examples in Quebec as well.
And how do you ensure that you work your, you know, technological solutions, the ones that we talked about, they're all related, they're all associated to and going towards patient care, right? Optimizing that. How do you prioritize, how do you make sure it's all human-centered, always?
Yes, that's a good question. I would say some parts of the system we've done that well, but broadly speaking, we haven't done a great job. Like, we're not designing the way Apple would design a phone. No instructions, no manuals. There's a couple of things. For us to design things that are human-centered, that actually make a difference in someone's life, using technology or AI or new processes, there's a couple of things. One, you need executive leadership, business leadership, to be behind this investment, this innovation, this initiative. That's number one. Two, and we don't do this enough in healthcare, is when we decide we're going to do something new that's going to matter, we hope, we have to bring the clinicians and the patients beside the technologists and the leaders to design what it is on day zero. So everyone's meeting and saying, why are we doing this? Let's all have input into what matters.
You have to make them part of the building the solution, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, there's not many organizations that are successful that are designing things without input from their end users, and I think we can do a better job of that. And then the third piece is really around change management, communication, being available to support people when we implement these large technologies. And so there's an interesting Gartner study that looked across all industries, not just health, and they basically asked CEOs for transformations that have gone well, how much did you invest in change management, design, communication? Transformations that went well, they've invested between 14 to 16% of their total budget. Transformations that did not go well, they only invested 4 to 6% of their budget on change management, meeting people where they are, co-design, at the elbow support. So we have to also think
There's not enough money.
And if we think about the money as $100, we're not putting enough of the $100 portion towards the things that will drive adoption, trust use, and I think that we can be better at that, and we will be. Yeah.
And finally, this last question, I want to know a little bit more about, you know, the human impact and how you experienced it firsthand. So can you share a moment when you saw really that the human impact of your company's work?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I'm happy to say there's many of those examples. One that comes to mind is in a maritime province here in Canada. And let's take it. Let's kind of channel your other question on being human-centered. So, imagine you lived in a rural area in a maritime province, and you had strep throat.
Yep.
Or you had itchy itchy symptoms.
Yeah.
You've had that. Yeah. Tis the season, right? And
yeah.
And you live in a rural area. You're 5 to 6 hours away from a major hospital. What are your options? It's late hours on the weekend. There is no urgent care clinic for you. Primary care hours are closed. You don't even have a GP. So what do? You get in your car. You miss a shift at work.
Yeah.
And you drive to emergency departments. You wait for 5 to 12 hours. And they tell you you have strep throat.
Yeah.
So...
It's a long process to get to...
It's a long process.
Yeah.
You know, so... Accenture, we had an opportunity to work with a maritime province and a leading retail pharmacy to say, how can we be innovative together and try to solve that problem for that person? So this maritime province and this retail pharmacy created the first ever patient walk-in clinic for minor ailments in retail settings that are closer to this person's home. So you fast forward now, this person... may have strep throat, does not have to drive many hours and wait for another many hours, and they get to walk 5 minutes to their retail pharmacy in a trusted clinical environment. They get diagnosed with strep throat. They're given clinical instructions on what to do next. They're happier. They've traveled less. There's less pressure on the ED system. The patient's happier. And the system, I think, is doing something
very
good.
It's a win-win-win-win.
Yeah.
So you're getting something that's human-centered and efficient at the same time for the system as well.
You got it. And that's, you know, there isn't any technology or fancy AI in that one. That is people coming together, problem-solving, and collaborating for a person who doesn't have great options close to home. So it's pretty cool.
And that's probably why you do what you do every day. A big part of them.
It is a huge part of it. It is, yeah.
Okay, now we're going to end this conversation with some rapid-fire questions because, you know, I want to get to know you better in the more human way or, like, personal way.
Okay.
So, okay. I don't know how many we have time to do, but whatever. To recharge. When you need to recharge, do you prefer solo time or social gathering?
Solo time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Some
time with my guitar.
Oh, guitar.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay.
A little bit of music. Yeah.
One of the greatest lessons you've ever received, a life lesson.
Life lesson, probably that failure is the best teacher. My parents were, you know, immigrated and worked really hard, and they always allowed my sister and I to fall, and never came too quickly to pick us up, just to let us kind of learn from failure. And I think that's kind of carried me through
where
through
you
life.
Are
I'm,
today.
I'm not too afraid of failing. I'm more afraid of not learning from failing.
So you're not afraid to try.
Yeah.
Morning or evening person? It's early, so you're
morning.
Probably morning. Yeah,
yeah,
that's what I was
thinking. Yeah.
How many coffees yet?
I usually do like four before noon. I had half a cup today,
is
so you get half
of me. Is that recommended by your doctor?
Four
before noon?
I don't let my doctor know about my caffeine.
Movie night, fiction or nonfiction or romantic or?
I'll do like. A rom-com once in a while, but I like You know, White Lotus.
Oh, love
it. Is a cool show.
Yeah. What is this? It's not fiction.
Not sure what it is. Maybe
it's
like
a drama.
Drama, satire type of thing. Yeah. And then like you know, cartel shows are cool too. Like mafia shows are pretty good.
Intense.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
So the whole spectrum, I guess.
We're gonna finish with this one. And it's a big one.
Okay.
What was your childhood dream, if you had one? If you remember.
I didn't really have a specific one. I think it was, like, my mom is a creative and an artist as well, so I think just wanting to be able to create, to build, to try new things was always just exciting for me. Yeah.
So you got there.
Yeah, I hope so.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Jimmy Yang, thank you so much for being on the podcast this morning.
Nice to meet you. This has been a pleasure. Yeah, merci.
Absolutely.